Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at Google Maps to start the show today. They've been around for 15 years now, and we're learning how to manage our smartphones. If you're still learning like I am, you better listen up here, because Jesse LeGrew has got a lot of good information for us today. He's the information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He works with designing, developing, implementing security standards and protocols. So we're going to talk about Google Maps. We'll certainly talk about other computer issues and software issues as well as we move along. But for Google Maps, has it made a difference in where you go? Maybe you learned to try a new restaurant because of it. What questions do you have about using your smartphone? Are there other smartphone apps that you really enjoy using or wish you knew how to use? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Jesse LeGrew, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
15 years of Google Maps, Jesse, and likely a lot of us think of that as an app, but it used to be just on the internet, and we'd print out the directions.
And that's what I was even thinking about before Google Maps existed, where, well, first, everyone was just used to having maps, having the right maps. So yeah. If you were in a different city, if you were in a different state, making sure you actually had purchased a physical map with you in the back seat or somewhere else, or a larger atlas. And I remember printing out directions from services like MapQuest.
Yeah.
So that I could read through the instructions beforehand and be ready for driving, because otherwise you're playing with a piece of paper, and then it turns into at least what we have today, which things are seamlessly integrated into phones and automobiles, where you can do most of your driving without really thinking about it too much, and everything is voice activated.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing to me. Although occasionally there's a glitch. There was a friend who was going to an event, and the business had actually moved within it had been a couple of years ago, but they'd moved to another location, and the map centered to the first to the original.
Yep. Well, it's actually interesting with that and a lot of the feedback mechanisms that Google does have. They have so much more than what you'd normally anticipate. First, it was just getting from point A to point B. Now it's, okay, we'll tell you how to get from point A to point B, but by the way, just so you know, it's 7:30 a.m. and they don't open till 8 o'clock. So I just want to let you know before that, and you'll actually get that prompt, which is really, really interesting that it's trying to figure out what you're doing and that you're getting there and that there are business hours. And I've even had the occasion to see, this is incorrect. This should be corrected. I remember actually, I've only done it once. I did it, and within 5 minutes, it was completely updated. And I was just kind of amazed that that happened, mainly because I wouldn't anticipate there'd be a lot of people just in the background hitting approve or verifying it. But it was a really straightforward process, and they updated it for basically everyone pretty immediately, which was really neat.
I've used it many times going to a new place. Well, normally if somebody else is in the car with me, but we'll say, well, we want to get breakfast or you want to get lunch, or depending on the time of day or whatever. And the friend with me in the car will say, well, here. And Google Maps will tell you what restaurants are available near where you are.
Yeah, and I've actually used that probably more times than I thought, because I thought it would be really clunky to look through a list and figure out exactly where it is, how long it's going to take.
Yeah.
And now you can just search for something, zoom in or zoom out to find out how kind of a wide of a range you want to go as far as location, and see reviews directly on there and kind of pick a place pretty quickly. It's really amazing how that's changed from the simple maps we have to kind of customizing our entire life experience through this, which was originally a map application, but now has so much other data that it can supply it to you pretty effortlessly.
Reggie in Oshkosh has an interesting question for us, I think. Reggie, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
So my question is I'm a truck driver, and we or are they planning to release anything that would help out, you know, truck drivers who don't want to spend $200, $300, $400 on a truck GPS?
So, yeah, routes that don't have weight restrictions, for as I think what Reggie, one of the things he's talking about there.
Yeah, the and taking a quick look, one of the ideas behind Google Maps is it's really for recreation and individuals not really in a commercial environment. So they kind of note that it's for pleasure vehicles only. That being said, could I see a potential update in the future? Maybe. I just don't think it's currently on their roadmap now. It's interesting to use the word roadmap in that case. I could see it probably happening in the future as they kind of – they're really customer or strictly end-user pleasure vehicle oriented. But I could even see that changing in the future. I just don't see it – seeing it happen right away. That being said, one thing I have noticed even with little updates – and I don't know when this happened, but even within the last year, I notice when I'm driving now, I actually do see speed limits actually on the application that I didn't before, which I always thought was nice because sometimes, you know, you might be driving for miles and not actually know what the speed limit is.
Right.
And so you're waiting for it. Now the app is actually able to call that up right away. I see it potentially coming in there at some point. I just don't see it on the roadmap, at least right now, kind of based on where their focus is for consumers.
But you sent them a note. You know, Reggie, if I were you, I'd send them a note and say, hey, why don't you have this app? And if they get enough of those kinds of questions or comments, maybe they'll change. I mean, think of all the truck drivers there are in the U.S. My goodness.
Yep. I think usually with just about any product, the more that the company will hear about different things that people want, they're probably going to be more likely to actually incorporate those features and potentially even find out, oh, if we actually incorporate this, we're going to be able to serve a different population in a different way than we never even considered. That could be completely a different scope. So I think the more you can do to at least ask and put that out there for feature requests, the more people that can do that, the better, because there's more likely going to be a change.
Thanks, Reggie. Appreciate the call. Mo in Ocano, it's your turn. Hi, Mo.
Hey, thanks, guys. My comment is just this. Relying on Google Maps while you're actually traveling, you really start losing your ability to use your spatial ability and judge landmarks and distances on time traveled. So I think there's some good things about it, but I think you really shortchange your brain.
Yeah,
using Google Maps.
Fair point, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's the case with a variety of technologies. Even thinking about, I used to read a lot when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Now I utilize a variety of services that deliver words that I can just listen to instead of actually taking the exercise to read to understand words. And it's a different kind of skill. And you do lose that if you don't use it. So any tool that we use on a day-to-day basis can put us in a different scenario where we are losing other skills that we've kind of built a lot of time on, although it's going to be even more interesting for individuals that grew up with the technology natively and never had to rely on those skills in the past.
Yeah.
Because that's very different from me, where half of my life I kind of dealt with driving. Well, I can't say half my life. Let's say 5 years. driving with, you know, different maps or having to read or do these other things. And then individuals that have never been without a smartphone that have told them where to go while walking, while driving, or anything else. And it's an interesting question to find out how those skills change. But it also could free up room to learn something else.
Yeah,
we don't
true.
Learn this, so we learn something else in replacement.
I was thinking about my daughter who in high school, she runs cross country. She plays soccer. And so going to all these events, I plug in, you know, where the high school is located or whatever in a particular town. And I was thinking about it, you know, I still have to look every time, whereas in the past, if I paid more attention, I guess, to try and find the location. So I didn't have to really know, or, you know, the landmarks. As Mo says, I knew landmarks and things like that that I don't now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I even think about food nowadays, where a lot of individuals cook, some people don't, and there's a lot of food services out there that will deliver just about everything to your door, in addition to full meals where you just have to throw them in the microwave. If you never had the skill to cook, how likely is it you're actually going to develop the skill to cook with all these different things out there? And it's I would say for most people, it's a basic skill that everyone should really know, but I think there's a lot of people that don't, because it really isn't a necessity and they're doing other things. The question is there any benefit being exchanged because that isn't being learned?
Yeah, interesting. Jeff in Superior, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share, you know, I'm nearing 60 years old, so, you know, I like to have, when I go on vacation, I like to have everything planned. I like to know where I'm going one day to the next. And Google Maps, when I've utilized it, has given me confidence that I didn't have before Google Maps. I mean, of course, I've traveled my whole life, but what I'm saying is when I go to Winnipeg or when I've been to Los Angeles or Kentucky or even I drove into Boston, and, you know, it can be very confusing, but I had confidence because I had Google Maps and I could see where I was, even though if I didn't have Google Maps, I'd be like, oh, my gosh. Where the heck am I? How did I get here? And where do I need, you know, it's just that confidence that really gives you, and that enhances your experience of enjoying your vacation.
That's a very, very good point. As you were talking, Jeff, I was thinking about another use of the phone. We were in South Florida on a vacation. My daughter is a big manatee buff. She loves manatees. And so I go on the phone and I just say into the phone, where can we go to see some manatees in the wild? And we and the gal says, well, go to, and then we get the map to show us where to go. We go, and sure enough, there were some manatees. I couldn't believe it. Oh, boy. Pat in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Dawn. Hi, Larry. I have a question about bicycle trails show up on Google Maps. First of all, I totally love Google about it, and I really like the feature where they show bicycles. But the Biloxi County Trail System in northern Wisconsin is quite extensive, and it's a paved trail system, and it doesn't show up at all on Google Maps. I'm wondering how one can request that it gets on there. Or does the guest know what criteria they use to put certain bicycle trails on their maps?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how they define it currently. One way that you could submit it to Google is actually through the app. They do have add a missing place, which is a feature which normally it's probably for an address, although you could suggest a different bike route or something else. And especially if you do give it by name, just with the variety of information out there, a lot of those are probably posted on different city, county, or state websites already with a lot of detailed information there, because people do this and map this stuff in a very detailed fashion that hopefully Google can consume. So I'd actually reach out to Google via the app, but it would also be interesting. So let's say it's a county or a state trail. You might actually be able to contact the DNR and they might be able to actually work directly with Google either to submit the necessary information to get incorporated. But like with any map, usually over time, it probably will get incorporated. It just depends on kind of where that priority is. But just like was brought up before, the more you ask for it, the more they're likely to do something about it. So I would definitely recommend reaching out to Google using the Google Maps feature. But if it is something where the DNR or a different organization can actually assist, they might have more information or can actually help to submit that for you.
Yeah, there you go, Pat. Thank you so much. Matt in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Matt.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Good. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I served in the U.S. Army, and the older troops learned to navigate using two-dimensional maps and interpreting topographical maps to the topography of the surrounding terrain. Whereas the younger troops, the millennials, if you will, they've grown up with GPS and Google Maps, et cetera. And most of the U.S. Military vehicles have GPS in it. However, if the GPS fails to work for whatever reason, the equipment breaks or there's a break in the signal, we learn that many of these younger soldiers then struggle to navigate without that instrument telling them where they are and where they're going. And so we've already seen the degradation of those skills. And so it has a consequence in the U.S. service.
Oh, interesting.
And it actually, I mean, and that's a really, really good point. It was something that I was even thinking about in terms of organizational resiliency, something they call like disaster recovery planning. So if something happens, what do you do? How do you react to it? Kind of being in IT, you kind of wonder if everything turns off or we lose power, what do we do? And one of the situations that I was thinking about is if we had a data center in a separate location and it's in a different city, well, how do we get there? Well, imagine all the technology's off. Do you actually have physical maps printed? Do you know how to actually navigate with a map in order to do that? And you always kind of plan for things to fail and then practice over and over like it will fail so you can actually build those skills. And I think that's a really important point because we are heavily reliant on technology. And when that technology goes away, do we know what we're going to do should that happen? Same thing, and they'll ask us for insurance now. If you have a fire alarm system in your house, does it report directly, for example, to local emergency services, which is usually a benefit because you want somebody to know right away so they can help to mitigate the risk, whether it's a fire, a flood, or something else. But imagine if that technology failed and no one got notified. If you didn't see an alarm, having older technologies or knowing how to do something should something fail is also important. And it's something we all need to consider in our day-to-day lives. I mean, I take technology for granted all the time and just plan for it to work.
Yeah.
But then you wonder if that one day it didn't, what are you going to
what
do?
What the heck are you going to do? Yeah. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. We've been zeroing in a bit on Google Maps. It's its 15th anniversary of Google Maps. We'll certainly take other questions as well as we move along today. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today. Natalie Guyette, our producer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. We've been talking Google Maps, but we can take other questions as well. The number is 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Peter in Washburn, it's your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I used to live in the Southwest, and I can a lot of stories of people who followed Google Maps to their death because they just throw out common sense and assume that Google Maps knows more than the sign in front of them that's telling them that road's not maintained or check weather or check with local ranger station, and then they'll just keep on driving, and if they live, then they're rescued. They say, well, Google Maps, I was just following my GPS, said I could go here. And I know that that's also happened in the Northwest, but not as often as the Southwest. There's many stories of people being killed just because they put more faith in their Google Maps than a sign or something.
Well, that's not a laughing matter here. I'm chuckling, but it's not a chuckling matter, I guess.
Yeah, and it's I mean, anything with technology, it can steer us in the wrong direction, and sometimes we do have to rely on our common sense a little bit. Our common sense, in some ways, I kind of feel changes a little bit, especially depending on where you are. But, you know, knowing whether something's safe or not, you know, planning ahead of time is always a good idea, especially if you don't actually know where you are, if there's an increased risk. Google Maps will tell us quite a bit, and a lot of other services will, but sometimes you just need to double-check and talk to local experts.
Colleen from Cumberland emailed that she uses the location finder feature on Google Maps. Sometimes it's slow to recalibrate. One time she was in Appleton, Wisconsin, and it showed that she was in Omaha, Nebraska. Took a few hours to get it to show the accurate location. She always says it sometimes seems to lag behind showing a person's location from 6 hours ago, even after refreshing it and making sure data are turned on.
Yeah, it could be a variety of things that can create the challenge. One, I would also make sure to turn off wireless in addition to data and then turn data back on. A lot of the geolocation can happen a variety of ways. Usually it does happen utilizing cell phone towers so they know where you're connected to, where you're getting your signal from, and they can kind of calculate in a rough location where you are. If that doesn't work, it might actually utilize other information from wireless and try to geolocate based on IP address or internet service provider data, which could show inaccuracies as well. It could also be an issue with the actual towers or the telco company in terms of how they have things registered or if they had issues during that time. But I would actually try to turn off wireless, have only data turned on, and see what that looks like. I haven't really noticed a whole lot of those challenges recently. I think
it may have been a while back.
It was probably more of an issue. But I haven't had too many issues where it's noted you're in a different spot. One thing, and you can do this actually with most computers, you can kind of geolocate an IP address, so it'll tell you roughly where it is. Sometimes there are these locations where they will just kind of clump a large amount of IP addresses into the geographical center of the U.S. because they actually don't know where it's registered to. So it doesn't mean that's where you're located. They just don't have enough information to actually tell you where you are because basically, you know, the necessary, you know, quote-unquote paperwork or data to make that decision just doesn't exist. So it defaults to some other spot. That could be part of it, but I would actually just try turning both wireless and data off, turning on only data and seeing if it refreshes. Otherwise, it could also be a Google Maps application issue, which uninstalling or reinstalling the application, making sure you have the latest updates could also be a good idea.
Amy in Mosinee, your turn. Hi, Amy.
Yeah, so the relatively recent addition of the traffic in Google Maps has been great, but as somebody who travels frequently back and forth, like across states, particularly from Wisconsin to Florida, I would love to see a layer with the weather, because we're often traveling in areas that we're not familiar with, and we could potentially stay longer at a restaurant or leave earlier or something like that if we could see some sort of a forecast layer come through, and then we would know. I mean, we can get everything from tornadoes to ice in a spring break trip. So.
Sure. That's a good point.
For the actual mobile application, I'm uncertain, but on the if you go to the website and actually go to Google Maps, there is a weather overlay. I just don't know if that's a feature that actually works via the smartphone app. I don't think it does off the top of my head because I do have an integration with my car, but it's very limited. It basically allows you to get from A to B and show you pieces of info, but I also haven't looked to see if I can actually turn on that weather overlay. So the feature's basically there. It may not be as detailed as you'd want it, you know, within like a half an hour of where you're driving through. The feature is there. It just depends on whether the mobile interface will actually allow it. The web interface does. So it's possible if it's not there right now, it's likely it will be available in the future so you can easily turn it on. They do have it. I just can't see whether it actually would show up on like a phone or a console display for your vehicle.
Amy, thank you. Vlad, it's your turn from Milwaukee. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for giving a show like that. I was traveling from Milwaukee to Boston, Massachusetts a couple of years ago, and I took shortest route that Google Maps showed me. And I'm driving for about 6-7 hours, and I got sign, welcome to Canada in 2 miles. And next sign said, you are in Canada or turn around. So when I took the shortest cut, apparently when I look afterwards, it was showing that I need to enter Canada, drive less than 100 miles and exit Canada, and keep going to Massachusetts. But you need to have your paperwork or passport or some kind of travel document. So the detour cost me about 700 extra miles plus 9 or 10 hours of extra driving. So before you take a long travel trip, just check out map where you're actually going so you don't see a sign, welcome to Canada.
Vlad, thank you so much for calling. Quite a few years ago, we were going someplace, and we put in take the shortest route. And instead of keeping us on the interstate, it took us through about 30 small towns, which was interesting to see, but added a long time to the trip.
Yeah, it's probably one of those things that I wouldn't even think about too much. I'm trying to find a location. I just hit start and I just follow where it goes. But it's also a good reminder to, you know, zoom out, take a look at the route. Does it make sense? And go ahead. And I think that also speaks to kind of that common sense. You may know a little bit more than Google Maps, which is based on a lot of data, but can help to be enriched by individual knowledge. And taking a higher level view and double checking is always good. They always say, what, measure twice, cut once. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to take that extra 700 miles unless you do have the time and want a nice leisurely journey. It can be very good for that as well.
You know, I have a rack on top of my car to handle kayaks, so I can always find my car in the parking lot because it always kind of sticks up. But there's actually a feature now that help you remember where you parked on the app. That seems useful.
Yeah, and I think that is the feature that is also based on kind of the location service data. So it kind of remembers where you are, where you've been. And it's kind of scary in a way. You can actually go on there. I'm like, oh, these are all the places I've traveled and all the places I've gone and the routes in the last 5 years. And so all that data is there. So, you know, from that, you could understand where somebody lives, where they frequently go. And you can actually understand a lot of habits. I actually turn my location services off just because I didn't want it there, although sometimes the data is actually interesting to revisit, including, yeah, you know, where did I park? But it relies on that feature. So it needs to know that historical location data so you can kind of find out where your car is, although you always have the option of kind of throwing the pin. This is where my vehicle is, and so you can always go back to it even if you don't have that same kind of location history turned on. So you can go to your waypoint and find out where you parked.
I usually, if I'm in a big parking ramp or something, I usually take a photo of the car with the nearest, you know, is it aisle G or whatever it is, row, you know, floor 4 or whatever it is. And that's what I do.
And that's actually kind of funny because I think one of the Super Bowl commercials actually did note one of the, favorite pictures. And it was basically a vehicle finder when you're in a parking lot. And so they had the sign. Yeah, that's really common where you just pull it out and like, okay, I'm in 6A and I'll make sure I go to the right floor and get in the right section.
Oh, man. Well, Kathy in Madison has a different kind of question, I think.
Yes. Hi, Jesse. Hi, Larry. I really enjoy just listening here to the Google information, but I'm having trouble getting my emails to go anywhere. And I'd kind of like to know what factors to look at on my desktop computer to get Outlook to release my email so that things I want to send get sent out. And they've been sitting there for days and I've tried everything. And I don't know whether this is an Outlook problem, Microsoft, or if it's my email provider.
And you've restarted your computer a few times?
Oh, yeah. Unplugged everything.
Okay.
And I can do it. My email comes also to my phone and I can reply to urgent things on my phone, but I can, you know, take an attachment and send it to somebody.
Okay.
Okay. So it sounds like overall the sending and receiving, is it a Microsoft email account that you're using?
Yes.
Okay. One thing I'd probably recommend, because it sounds like at least the phone works, so the overall email service is functioning. I'm guessing if you went on the web interface, it would probably function as well. So it sounds like it's most likely something in Outlook. Have you tried going to your Outbox and Outlook to review the email messages that are kind of sitting there?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Have you opened any of them yet and then just tried to hit send again?
Yes.
Okay. And do you receive an error when you attempt to send?
No.
Okay.
They just hold them in the box.
Okay. And are they italicized or are they kind of a normal non...
If I haven't checked them, they're still bold.
Okay.
But as soon as I go in and check it and try to resend it, it comes into the list unbolded. Hmm. So I can tell which ones, you know, I've tried to resend.
Okay.
And, you know, ones that are now out of date, I've kind of deleted, but I just can't figure it out. And it was shortly after, I think, an update happened with Outlook.
Hmm.
There was something out there I need to know.
My guess is it's probably some weird kind of artifact with Outlook. That's just, as soon as you get one of them sent, they're all probably going to go fine. Are any of the emails that you have in your Outbox right now ones that, you couldn't easily recreate or that are necessary to be kind of sticking around?
Well, I mean, I've tried sending the same thing from my phone, and some of those have worked. I can't just delete them all.
Okay. One thing that you might want to try is to actually, you can make copies of the emails that you do have in your Outbox and actually kind of store them in an inbox or a new folder that you have on the left-hand side of Outlook where it kind of lists inbox, sent, trash, junk. You can actually make copies so you can basically recreate the emails and send them later. What I'd probably try, and I'm guessing you have, is just trying the send, receive all, which most likely I'm guessing you're going to be left with the same situation. What I'd probably consider trying is actually going into your email settings and removing and basically reconfiguring them. Have them rediscovered by Outlook so that you have the right outgoing email server. Usually that wouldn't change for a lot of Microsoft services. They will kind of do that in the back end and you won't have to change anything yourself. I think that may help. But that's one reason I'd probably recommend actually, because you can copy the emails and you can move them somewhere else, free up that Outbox where there's nothing there, send an email to yourself to see if it goes through. Hopefully it goes into the Outbox and then it eventually will disappear. Once that's done, you can actually basically copy and paste the previous emails you have and hopefully those should send. It could be there's just one email in there that's the oldest one that has some weird artifact in the email itself that is, for whatever reason, not allowing it to be sent. It could be just removing that one email will allow the floodgates to open and everything else will get sent. That's the only guess I would have. Otherwise, in the lower right-hand corner, they usually have a little envelope when it's actually sending email. When you double-click on that, it will actually open up a prompt where you can see the actual error messages in Outlook. And that should be the same as if you hit the send receive on the ribbon at the very top of Outlook. It will actually give you more details on what it's doing and if it runs into an error, what the error is.
There you go. Good luck, Kathy. Thank you so much for calling. Janet in Madison has a question. We're back to Google Maps here and maybe Waze applications. Hi, Janet.
Hey, guys. I travel or do some long-distance driving a fair amount, and I've always been a Google Maps user and love it. It's been great. And friends have been using Waze and saying, oh, you should try it. So I did, and I thought I'd share my results. My experience was that Waze the directions weren't quite as clear or in advance enough for me, or maybe I'm just used to Google Maps. So I was a little frustrated with that, but I love that it does crowdsourcing, lets you know if there's a police officer up ahead or a road hazard up ahead. And my experience is Google Maps doesn't provide that. So I figured out a little trick where I can do both. I use my Google Maps for my directions. I put in my destination. But Waze, I just turn on Waze, and I don't put in a destination. And so it still tells me when there's a cop ahead or a road hazard. And it works really well.
Well,
so there you go.
There, thanks, Janet.
That is a really nice option. When I was taking a look at different options for weather, too, I think Waze actually did have some information specifically on weather. I don't know how that kind of works, but it's kind of nice to also have kind of a crowdsourced information where mm-hmm. people are kind of supplying the application with data, and you're able to just take it and use it, which you can get some good timely information. But, you know, Google Maps is more curated. Usually it's a little bit more static, even though they still do have a lot of information on accidents. But most of those, as I did see in an article maybe a week or two ago, you can get some false data, like having a traffic jam that doesn't actually exist.
Janet, thank you so much. Waze. Ron in Lancaster, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I love Google Maps. I come from the MapQuest days, and there was nothing worse than being in a state you don't know and getting off your turn and having completely worthless direction. So I do love the updates, but it's important to remember that they don't have all the information you might need on there. We were heading to the coast this summer, going through West Virginia, and it was giving me two options, one really high in the state, one really low. So I thought, hey, why don't I take the direct route? And, well, since that wasn't topographical, I spent all day winding up and down the side of a mountain.
So
I realized that's why they routed me the other directions. It was a great trip, though. I mean, there's a nice mystery spot up there that I never got to see. Great view, but not the way I would have chosen.
Ron, thanks. Appreciate the call. Yeah, it doesn't always work the way you think it's going to work, that's for sure. Oh, man. Our guest today, Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect at Madison College's Technology Services Group, as we talk about Google and other kinds of computer issues and phone issues. Give a call at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. So we've spent quite a bit of time talking about Google Maps at turn 15 years of age and getting some tips to get the most out of the app. We're taking other questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. Richard in De Pere will give you a chance now. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that we were talking about location sharing earlier with Google.
Yeah.
And that reminded viewers, it's possible to request that Google purge that history so they no longer keep it on their servers.
Oh.
That's a good note.
I did not know that. No. Oh, excellent. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate that. You know, we were talking off air about a situation that you were familiar with, about an area where the person knew the best route, but Google Maps wasn't giving them that route.
Yeah, and in this, it turned out that they had found out from somebody else, they had a lot of people going through their neighborhood that, you know, they just didn't want the traffic. It was a distraction. It was noisy. And so while it might have been the fastest route for a lot of individuals, they actually didn't want to see a lot of that traffic. And so they were able to find a way to basically ask Google to deprioritize that route, so it would force them on more public routes, I guess, less in their neighborhood, so they wouldn't actually get that noise and distraction. So there are ways to request Google a variety of things, and you know, even though Google's a really big company, there are still people that are listening and will take feedback and will make changes. It doesn't mean those changes won't get unmade at some point because they have a lot of people asking to change data. They may decide this is just way too much work. We're going to level the playing field and we're not going to make any customizations. But it always doesn't, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Lena in Oshkosh, it's your turn now. Hi, Lena.
Hi, Larry and Jesse. I have a question about an older phone. It's a flip phone. It does have 3G. And I'm working in a other person's home, and there are days when I don't get any service. I have AT&T, and it's an AT&T phone, but the house uses Spectrum on television and Wi-Fi and the phone. So then in the evening when I drive home, two blocks down from where I work, the phone kicks in. So have you got any ideas what's going on or if I just need to get the new phone?
And so there are a couple things. If it is a 3G phone, at least AT&T noted they were going to shut off all 3G in 2022. So it's a ways away, but Verizon's also trying to get rid of it this year. Eventually, that technology for that voice communication is going to go away. So in the long run, you're going to want to get a new phone. Most likely, that's also going to affect how available service is. And it can be a variety of things when you're in different locations. Building construction can actually change your service availability quite a bit. Even if you're in one building, it may work great one day, and then another day, just due to some thing changing with the building itself, it can block signals or make it more difficult to get one. Getting a different phone is probably going to help, in addition to just the fact that newer services like 4G or 5G will increase service availability and a little bit more bandwidth as well. So I think in the long run, you're probably going to want to get a different phone. You might also be able to contact AT&T to see if they have something like a repeater, although it'd be honestly something, it'd be something you'd keep at the place that you're working. Sometimes they will give those out for free. I've heard of people having different services, not being able to get signal, and they'll literally ship you a repeater you can plug into the wall that will get a cellular signal, and it will repeat it into a very small area. It's a possibility, but just due to the fact they're getting rid of the technology, it might not be something they have available just because they know they are going to sunset it.
And if you have your phone service, just as an aside, with the flip phones, probably Lena's probably had that for a long, long time and can probably get a pretty good deal on a new phone through the service. And you don't have to get the very latest. If you can get one that's like one less than the latest, it's considerably cheaper.
Yeah, and if a lot of people still do like flip phones, they do not want smartphones. They just want something they can literally call somebody and receive phone calls and talk to somebody. That's actually coming back quite a bit. I've been seeing brand new flip phones come out because people do not want all the smart features. They just want something that's mobile that they can actually just make phone calls with.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Lena. Appreciate your call. Somebody else was wondering, you know, on smartphones and computers, we frequently get notifications from apps, and sometimes they're useful, sometimes they're not very useful. Can you explain a little bit more about a notification and maybe how to change it if you want to?
Yeah, there are a couple ways to do it. There's the blunt approach, which is to turn off or turn on all notifications, which usually by default, everything's just turned on. If you do have an iPhone, they have the Do Not Disturb, which will turn off notifications for a set period of time or until you turn it back on. So if you're in meetings or something else, it will not give you those pop-ups or buzz or give you tones. So you can do it for a short period. They have something similar in Android as well. Otherwise, what you can do, and I've done this on my Android in the past, if you install an app, you might find out that application is giving you new notifications. Instead of going through all of my apps and turning on or off all of the single applications I want, I'll wait for the prompt I will click on a little down arrow, like what they call a chevron, and then just say turn off notifications for this app. So you can kind of play whack-a-mole and just turn off the ones as you get them, and you'll stop receiving those notifications. But usually they're going to be in settings and notifications. I think in the iPhone it's probably general settings, and then you'll see the notifications options. And they'll have it per application, so you can really customize it, or you can say, I don't want any, or you can do the do not disturb. One thing to note is some applications, you may not be able to turn off the notifications from the actual phone. You may need to turn it off in the application. And I think that was noted for at least one application in the past where even if you turn it off in the iPhone, you still get the notifications. You actually have to go into that app and turn off the notifications in the application itself. So depending on which apps you're using, it can be simple or more complex. If you only want application notifications for email, you can usually turn them all off, turn that one on, and you're set.
Natalie Guyette, our producer, just let me know that her Android has Do Not Disturb on it as well. So
yep, and it's I think it's a nice feature. They I know for iOS, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I found myself accidentally turning on Do Not Disturb, and I'm like, why am I not receiving any notifications? What's going on? And I think I would just put it in my pocket, and somehow I would hit it. They make it easy where you don't have to unlock the phone necessarily to change some of those Do Not Disturb settings, which is nice because you usually want to do that really quickly because you're moving into a meeting or you're in a place where you don't want to be playing with your phone or seen playing with your phone.
Yeah.
So they try to make it nice and easy where you can turn off those features, at least for that limited time frame.
Rick in South Range, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for the great program. I have a question about security on a new computer. I just bought a HP computer with Windows 10, and it came with McAfee antivirus by default. And of course, they're doing their best to convince me to continue once the 30-day freebie expires, which is just in a matter of days. Is there any other antivirus software or malware that you would recommend that isn't McAfee?
Since you do have Windows 10, one thing I would recommend, they do have something called Windows Defender, which is built into Windows, and it's updated.
It's a pretty good one, too.
It's pretty good. They've made a lot of enhancements. When it first came out, it was okay. Now it's much, much better. They have a really good developer base behind it. I would actually remove McAfee, and you could use Windows Defender itself. It should update with Windows Update. And it should be fairly automated. There are other services that you can pay for, but the Windows Defender is a great service that also does incorporate a lot of features that are just built into Windows and that are supplied by Microsoft. If you were looking for other free products that can help to kind of clean up your computer, I've utilized Super Anti-Spyware or programs like SpyBot Search and Destroy. Usually they're cleaning up information that might have come on from not necessarily malicious software, but software that causes pop-ups or that might be a little bit generally more annoying. But I would, at the very least, just use Windows Defender, keep it up to date, make sure it's turned on, because most likely McAfee, usually a lot of the antivirus providers out there will, at least in the past, have just turned Windows Defender off and then use theirs, mainly because if you have two of them running at the same time, they can conflict with each other.
Yeah.
They just argue. That's become better and where it may not be disabled currently, but if you remove McAfee, turn on Windows Defender. It should be right in the control panel or under settings. You should be okay, but there are also free options out there just to do a general cleanup on your computer like Super Anti-Spyware.
There you go, Rick. Thank you. Chuck, do you have a question or comment?
Hi, good morning. My question is regarding Google Maps.
Yeah.
I tried to contact Google on this problem and had problems. But when I put my address in, it comes out. I live west of Viroqua on a street called Johnson Avenue. And when I put my address in, Google takes it to Johnson Street in Viroqua.
Yeah.
The problem is I've had deliveries go to Johnson Street in Viroqua, and then I get a notification that I have the wrong address, and, you know, I have to call and try to get people, give them instructions on how to get to my house. And that cost me $30 once, and I had to call the company in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
So how do I kind of get
fix
them
that
correct?
That's a good question. Have you received the packages from UPS, USPS, FedEx, or are they usually the same
UPS
company?
UPS and FedEx are fine. And okay. My U.S. Post Office address is, you know, Johnson Avenue, Viroqua, Wisconsin. But my actual location is 12 miles west, west of the city itself.
That is a tough one. I don't know what you do with that one. Tell you what, we'll ponder that. Chuck, stay listening, and we'll do a little research here during our news break. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll get back with your question and all the other questions that we have here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking today with Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Been talking about Google Maps a bit. It's been around 15 years. We're also talking about smartphones, what apps you like to use and don't like to use, and other software issues as well. Join in with your own questions or experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we had, as we were breaking for news, Chuck from Viroqua says when companies use Google Maps to deliver packages to him, it can be confusing and inaccurate. He has a Johnson Avenue address, and there's a Viroqua, and there's a Johnson Street address that's in Viroqua itself, but he's actually 12 miles away from Viroqua, even though they have to use Viroqua as the address.
Yeah, and there's probably a couple things I'd recommend. So if it is Google Maps, I would actually try to do a search for the address, either using street and avenue, just to see what the difference is. And if you do note that the wrong one comes up to, you know, or your address actually goes to a different location, at that point you can actually request Google just for that address. This is incorrect. Please correct it. And then you can kind of note in there. It's probably not a very uncommon problem, especially if there are such a similarity in the address. The only other thing I'd recommend in addition to that would actually be to contact the specific carriers that you receive those packages from that are incorrect. So if you do notice on the package label, street versus avenue, whatever's correct, just note that it was actually delivered to the incorrect location. It'll probably be a little bit trying to note that several times, but hopefully that feedback will eventually get through. They'll be able to update kind of what they're doing, and you'll get better delivery service that way. Otherwise, I guess you could also recommend to Viroqua to see if you can change your street name.
There you go. Sandy and McFarland, your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Jesse and Larry. We have a bit of a cell phone mystery that happened yesterday. Both my husband and I have iPhones, and we have Verizon as the carrier. And at the same time yesterday, simultaneously, my phone rang and his phone rang, and the caller ID on each phone was that phone.
Yeah.
So any idea what created that? Yeah. It was spooky. Neither one of us, obviously, he answered. It was too weird. But what could have that been?
And that was I was kind of curious to see if you did answer what they actually noted. So it's actually relatively easy to spoof that caller ID to give it a different number, whether it's your own number or somebody else's. And this has been done in a variety of ways for robocalling to basically get people to answer. People are more likely to answer to the same area code than something that looks unfamiliar or says unknown caller ID. They probably did it just to have you thinking and curious a little bit, curious enough to answer the phone so they could actually get you on the line. But it was very likely a robocall of some sort.
Oh, for sure.
And that's, in terms of the incorrect, you know, caller ID, that's actually relatively, unfortunately, at the moment, easy to do without other changes and laws put in place to you know, make that not happen.
Yeah, it's a spoofing call, as they say. Sandy, thanks. Harry in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Harry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So two questions, really. The first one is we're building a house and we want to install security cameras. And so I wanted to see if your guest had a recommendation on that. And I've done, I think, quite a bit of research online to see, you know, which is the better cameras to buy and whatnot. And, you know, if you do a Google search, you'll see, you know, a bunch of articles and reviews of security cameras. But how do you really differentiate the accurate ones? Because you read one and read the top 10, and then you read the next one and read the top 10, and there's no 10 that are, none of the 10 are, have any similarity.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's it's actually a really, really good question. I think one of the challenging things that people have right now with especially cameras is how secure are those cameras on your home network? Is it easy for somebody to get remote access to them and to be seeing things within your home or outside of your home that they shouldn't be? I would take that into consideration when kind of purchasing any product, because if it is connected to the internet, it does increase the risk that somebody could potentially attack it and gain access to it, whether it's because they access your cloud account or because they actually are able to hop onto your wireless network and actually get access to it that way. Granted, I would recommend anything if you do have this, especially inside your house and you're using a cloud provider, make sure that they do have a privacy policy with how they utilize your data. I would recommend, and I recommend this for everything, but especially for this kind of camera that could have sensitive data, ensure that it has two-factor or multi-factor authentication so that somebody can't easily break into your account to retrieve information. If they don't have that, I would just not even consider them as a provider. If you do have extra paranoia, consider a closed circuit system that would actually require somebody to be physically present at your house in order to get access to it. And usually a lot of those you can buy at hardware stores. They don't really connect to the internet. They are just directly cabled into a hard drive that's basically storing videos. That way, you know, if somebody got in your physical premises, they could get the videos, but they kind of have to break in order to do it. So it gives you kind of an extra barrier of protection. But if you are looking for a cloud provider, I would look at options that do have multi-factor authentication. Cost is obviously going to be a concern depending on what you're recording. And it's really not an easy choice because a lot of products do the same thing. Usually they're going to charge you a lot for cloud storage. And that's where you can tweak settings to save some money, whether it's only enabling during motion activation or other events. So the cost is probably going to be one of the considerations when picking a choice. I would just make sure that any cloud provider, if it's really cheap, I would be concerned because the cameras themselves may not be frequently updated or secured in a manner that they can. You can easily buy a $20 IP camera from any store, but it's also a $20 camera that's really easy to break into.
And I think Consumer Reports, the magazine, did a piece on cameras. And you might just go online and, I mean, as another place to look, Consumer Reports isn't a bad place.
Yeah, and that's a great location. And there's great different options looking.
Yeah.
They always look into different aspects of security cameras. What are you actually looking at? Are you looking for security? Are you looking for feature set? Are you looking for expandability? Depending on what you're really looking for, we'll probably tell you, give you a better indication about what product to select. So I would still do some research, but also consider utilizing a cloud-based resource for cameras that don't have as much sensitive data, like something looking outside your house. If it's looking inside your house, I would be more inclined to consider a closed circuit system.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're looking at.
There you go, Harry. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Rich in Two Rivers, it's your turn. Hi, Rich.
Hello, Larry. I want to tell you I really love your show and I miss Joey Cardine, but I like you more.
Thank you.
Yeah. What I want to say is there an app to not get apps? Because I don't want the advertisements from the apps. And it's kind of a catch 22, you know? So you leave that to your guests.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. Is there a way to get rid of those?
If you're trying to get rid of ads specifically,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to do it with ads that are actually built into the applications that you download. There are a lot of tricks to it, but it's really complicated. There are some applications out there that will do it. If you just want to make sure nothing can get automatically installed on your phone, there are ways to actually lock down your phone settings so you require a lot more work in order to approve an application to install. And you can actually use parental control software to do something similar.
Oh,
because
yeah.
In a lot of those cases, you want to filter content and you also want to limit the applications that people can use or install. That is an option. There are some free versions out there you can do that with. You can also, if you have an Android phone, if you remove the Google Play Store, that's an option. If you have a different account that somebody has a password to for Apple ID, if you don't know the password, you can't install an app generally, depending on how you have your settings set up. So there's a variety of options. Honestly, parental control software is an interesting one because it gives somebody else the keys to be able to do that should you really want.
Yeah, good idea. Rich, thanks. Mary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. See, I have a very strange thing that has happened to me a couple of times over the last 2 weeks, in that I get notifications on my phone, and when I look at it, it says that it's coming from my work email address. And the first time I didn't do anything with it, thinking I would look at it on my computer, and then they were just gone. But this weekend, it happened again, so I clicked on one of them, and it told me which I have three different emails on my phone, but not my work. And so I clicked on the email address that it said it went to, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And that includes in spam, in junk, in deleted. It's nowhere there.
Hmm.
And the thing is that the one that I clicked on was from May.
Are you getting, is it a text-based notification? Is it a normal
notification? It's just a notification, and I think it had like a little sideways diamond on it.
Silence here.
Yeah, I'm just processing a little
bit. The gears are turning.
Kind of what I'm thinking is that it's probably a fake message of some sort. I just don't know exactly what it is. Have you installed any applications on your phone recently?
No, I don't recall doing that, no.
Okay. Because the other thing I was thinking of is you might be actually getting notifications from an application on your phone that somehow is associated with your other email address.
I just remembered, I did. I have my service with Verizon, and I went in to talk to them about some issue I was having, and I hadn't set up my Verizon mobile app, and so we set it up together in the store. But that's the only one I recall setting up.
Okay. Do you know if you used your work email address?
No, I did not. I never use my work email address on my cell phone.
Okay. Another thing I'd recommend is actually going back into the store to see if they can take a look at it to see what this specific notification is. I do think it probably is some kind of notification from an application. I don't think it's your email sending it. I could go the really paranoid route and say that somebody broke in your email account, but I don't know if that's the case. You didn't see it in your inbox. They could just be kind of faking an email address. But I would actually go to the store just so they can see that notification to see where it might be from.
Yeah. It's something, you know, if she ever, say, forwarded a work email to her home address.
And if that were the case, it may not show in sent items, depending on how it looks, but it would always have, usually it would have an FW colon, like it would show as a forward, and that would be part of the notification.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So there you go, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I hope that helped. Sharon in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Yeah, thank you. I'm responding to the woman who called. Her and her husband had gotten calls at the same time coming, looked like it was coming from their own phone.
Yeah.
And that also happened to me about, several months ago, and I also have Verizon. I contacted Verizon, and they gave me a free additional spam filter, which has helped dramatically. And so maybe she just wants to contact Verizon so she won't get that hit again from those spammers.
Oh, very good. I'm on Verizon. Maybe
that's
give
a really
Verizon
good idea.
A call, too. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Jeff and Matt. In Mauston, excuse me. Jeff in Mauston, your turn. Hi.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick question. For Christmas, my kids got me an iPhone watch. I have an iPhone, and I was hoping and thought, I can't find the app anymore. There was an app that when you walked away from your phone, your watch would alert you that you've left your phone behind. Do you guys have any idea if that app exists anymore?
Oh, that is a great question. I don't have an iPhone watch.
I don't either, so I don't know.
You might have it for Android watches, too, but I swear they had something like that. So I just want to pick your brain.
Maybe.
And was this an application that you actually installed on the iPhone watch itself?
No, I didn't. I heard about this before I received the watch. Now that I have the watch, I can't find an app that accomplished that.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
If you've heard of one.
I haven't heard of one, but that's not unusual that I haven't heard of. So.
Yeah, they have
options. There's something called Lockout, Natalie said? Lookout. Lookout app. Natalie said there's a Lookout app. That relates to that.
Yeah, and they have options for how to use your Apple Watch when your iPhone is not around, although the Lookout app might be the option to choose here.
Yeah, that might be. Check that, Jeff. Check that out.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Natalie, thanks for that tip. Let's see, before you move out of connection range from your iPhone, the Lookout Watch app will alert you that you're about to go out of range and give you the option to make your iPhone emit a scream sound or pull up a map of the iPhone's location.
Yep, and that's also an option for Android as well. It's on the Google Play Store. So it looks like they have an application for a variety of different devices.
All right, there we go. Well, we can take another call, and we've got somebody joining us right now, Roger in Madison. Let's go there. Hi, Roger.
Hi. Just wanted to recommend an app called Nomo Robo.
Yeah.
N-O-M. Yeah, that you don't have to get it from your phone service provider. When I installed it on my phone, the number of robocalls that I got immediately dropped about 80%. And I've actually taken up the hobby of answering robocalls so that I can be sure that that number is legitimately a robocall, and then immediately put them on the blacklist. So so that other people won't be bothered by them.
Very good. Yeah, Nomo Robo, some folks at Consumer, the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, have also said that Nomo, and it's like N-O-M-O-R-O-B-O, Nomo Robo, yeah, is a very good app. There's none that will get rid of every single one.
Right. It's kind of like a lot of phishing or spam emails. You get as much as you can, but there's always some that squeak through. And the Nomo Robo is a good option because it's one available for iPhone and Android. They do have options for landlines and mobile.
Amy emailed that a question about her Samsung Galaxy 57 smartphone. With Samsung in the past, you used to be able to assign separate ringtones to separate contacts in your phone. A few years back, they've removed that feature. Wondering, does anyone know when Samsung might be returning that feature, if at all?
My guess is if they actually did remove the feature, just considering the age of the device, it's probably unlikely they're going to add it back. Granted, that's just a guess on my part, but I think at this point they're probably trying to urge people to get new devices as well, either to get new features or just to make sure that they're up to date. And I'm not saying that they necessarily did that to get people to upgrade, but sometimes that can be the feeling. And that's the case if they did change it. Another option is maybe they just changed the look and feel, so it's actually really, really hard to find, which could be the case. Sometimes even minor changes actually cause a lot of challenge on end users, because a minor change can, if you're doing something all the time, like changing ringtones for specific contacts, one small change can mean a completely different way to actually set the same setting. If they did get rid of it, though, my guess is they're probably not going to turn it back on, and you're probably going to have to get a newer device in order to do that. I don't know if that's S7 specific, but if you do look for a different device, just make sure that is an option that does function.
There we go. On that note, we're out of time. Jesse, thanks so much for coming by. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it.
So do I. Thank you.
Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Always great to have him come by, and he will be back, and we'll do it again. Would you like to hear more about our guests or show topics? Check out our new blog. Just go to WPR.org/Larry to see what's there. And if you missed part of the show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry to hear recordings of our broadcasts. Search by topic or date, and they go back for years, as a matter of fact. Thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we'll be talking with a tax expert. In the meantime, stick around.